data ecology, okay, ecosystem ecology. What kind of ecosystem ecology? Interface ecology. So if you want to narrow it down, you see, you can. But ecology is now enough separate discipline. It's young, therefore, we're not sure of all the parameters. We're not sure if all our paradigms are correct. Mm-hmm. We have lots of testing to do. But ecology is now a separate subject. It's not a division of biology. And the word, we go back to the meaning of the word. The word ecology doesn't say it's anything about biology. Mm-hmm. You know, ornithology says, you know, it's birds. Zoology is animals. Botany is plants. But ecology is houses, households, mm-hmm. instead of the house. So that's a totally different. So we simply would go into back, you might say, to what was originally meant. And it got lost there, and it gets stuck in biology, and it gets lost in evolution, which is a good subject, but that's not what ecology is about. Just, mm-hmm. But some people think it is, and so we have the evolutionary biologists have dominated in 9 out of 10 textbooks that are taught in biology are evolutionary biology textbooks. I don't know, what book did you use when you were a student? Your first ecology
book? My first ecology book was the...
I can't remember the text.
I can't remember the... Smith.
Smith. Yeah, Smith pretty much copied mine in general. So it's the one that tries to be holistic in reductionism. Mm-hmm. But he's a textbook specialist who spends all his time writing textbooks. So he has many editions and several sizes, small and large ones. And they started out holistic, and they became in more recent editions more evolutionary biology, because that's what he thought was, that's what the people told him, that was the market. He listened to the market.
Yeah.
I don't listen to the market.
Market ecologist.
That's all right. I'm concerned about the market, yeah. I hope it. But if I listened to the market, I would never read the book in the first place, mm-hmm. because there was zero market.
All right, let's see. Next question is, how has your work added to or changed our modern views of the environment and ecology?
Well, certainly changing it in the sense that people realize that the environment is a major part of their life, and that they can't just take for granted. The whole environmental movement, you see, is based on concepts that our life support, goods and services, air, water, food, and so on, which we take for granted. We don't pay money for most of it. We pay a little money to pump water and some water bill. We pay a little money for the food, but not for the work of nature and rain and soil development and so on. So I think that's the watershed change, is that whereas primitive people knew that the environment of them were very closely related, and their success depending on keeping the environment good. And we went into a phase where we had the mindset we must control and exploit nature and dominion, mm-hmm. type thing. And now we're realizing that that's only half the game, and we must also shift so that getting ecological ideas and principles into the general thinking, and gradually in education. 3 years ago, when the president of this university said we're all of our graduates environmentally illiterate and we must do something about that, that's a pretty big watershed change. Because before that, part of our problem is that decision makers today are environmentally illiterate. They don't know anything because they didn't have anything in school. Sometimes I ask groups, I said, how many of you ever had any environmental education when you were in grade school? And hardly anybody ever raises a hand. But that's going to be different now.
Yeah.
The only question is what and how. Mm-hmm. And it's bewildering to many people because there's so much out there. So I would say that it's the recognition that we must include the environment in our total lifestyle. And that's why I use the life support analogies all the time.
Okay. What are your personal thoughts and feelings about nature and the environment?
Well, it's part of our, it's a major part of our life. I think that's pretty well what we just said.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's, that we need. It's also something that's beautiful and aesthetic values that people instinctively search for. Person makes a lot of money, the first thing he seeks for is a nice rural home or a cottage on the beach or an island someplace, you see. So we know that human behavior ultimately seeks, you know, communion with nature, if you wish. And so that's what we know. And some people call ecology religion. I don't think that's quite a term to do it, but belief in ecology is just as important as belief in any religion. You have to have some kind of belief, you see. And some people say you have to have a God because you have to have something to explain the unexplainable. And the average person cannot comprehend science or all that. He can't explain. It's hard for him to understand. So it's nice to say, well, that's God did that. You know, that's God's will. That's God's work. You know? So I never knock religion. You know, the problem is that too many gods. And each Muslims have a God, and we have a God. And they're sure their God is the right one. So when they get into conflict, they always will fight to the death because their God's on their side.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go into battle, we all pray for our God. You know, the Muslims pray for theirs. So religious wars are one of the worst ones because everybody is sure they'll win.
Mm-hmm.
Because their God's on their side. Okay. Well, but don't knock it down. If people don't have something to believe in, then I don't think we could have a society. So before you run down religion, you have to say what do you replace it.
Have you ever taken part in a social or political movement for the environment?
Well, a big one was the march to 1969-70. We had give all the news stories about this, how we got people excited about preserving the marshes. And we had students, we had bumper stickers, we had buttons. We sent fact sheets all out to every school in the state, and so on. So that was our first and perhaps biggest accomplishment, was to get the idea of setting aside what we call, or what we now call a bill, which is a not complete restrictions. It's a bill that requires, if you're going to do something here, I think something should be done. It's a permitting law. So that's what we now need that for rivers and floodplains. It's a permit law where you don't mess up the floodplains at all unless you've got a really good reason to. And then you get to get permission from the commission that this is going to be not going to hurt the whole river. Unless you've got to build a bridge or something, build a dock out in the marsh, you can do that, but you get a permit for it. If you're going to build a bridge across the marsh to get to an island, then you're required to build a bridge, not a fill, because a fill will stop the water flow, and that's what kills the marsh.
Mm-hmm.
That was our accomplishment, learning how in the practical world. And the Journal of Constitution every Sunday would have a beautiful article about one of the sea islands. Pictures. We would help the journalists. In other words, we got journalists to work hard on this. So pretty soon, all over the state, they wanted to preserve the marsh, and that floored the people on the coast because they thought, they didn't realize that the people that don't live there cared anything about this. You see, they were flabbergasted. I went down there one time for a hearing on this bill, and somebody said, "Dr. Odom, what are you?" He said, this is our country. What are you doing down here?" This is my marsh. I said, "Actually, I've spent more time here than you have." But the point was, they never questioned our science. They just said, We don't want state law because we're going to do it locally. We've already zoned the Martians. We want a state law, you see. I said, okay, we want a law that will see that you do. Because we know zoning does not allow, yeah. You see. Yeah. So, you know, so, and so with all the publicity and so on, it works. So the last part of our little folder that we have, this little editorial, my Constitution editorial man, who says the system works. It can't work. I mean, the legislation can't respond to public demand. And there hasn't been much of that even today, you see, where the whole public is jumping up and down. But they're beginning more. And so we learned that that there have to be three things before you get anything done in the environment. Once it has to have some basis and some science behind it to show that this is important and that this should be done, then you have to have some government agencies involved some way. Mm-hmm. Maybe a law, may not be a law, but they've got to be involved, you see. And you've got to have some public citizens group who's pushing this. So maybe you get a citizens group there. Then fourth, you got to have business involved in it, or not against it, not for or against it. At least keep business out of it, or else have them on your side. If they get on the other side, you're done for. Mm-hmm. So we look at restoration projects and things like that, and if those three or four components are there, they usually succeed. If any of them is missing, if you don't have a good scientific basis for it, if you don't have some government involved in it, state, federal, both. If you don't have business interest in it, or at least neutral, and if you don't have citizens in it, you ain't going to do anything. So this is a holism, you see, at another level. Mm-hmm. This is true ecosystem thinking, is that you've got to get all of your components into the model. And so we can take some pride in having done that. I think our Kellogg study 2 years ago, which looked at the history of the environment and made many recommendations about it, one of which we need 20% of the state set aside for life support, and that's accepted by the DNR and by the governor of Georgia. And the governor appointed the Preservation 2000 task force when he came in, Governor Miller. Mm-hmm. And we have now 6 million new acres added to set aside. Mm-hmm. A lot of those are cut over land that can be bought cheaply, but you know, let them grow back. And a lot of it's using sportsman's money, but that's all right. It's for possible hunting, but there's other than is there. Mm-hmm. Not all need to be hunting. And so we learn how, you see, and the conservation easement as a means of getting people to voluntarily agree not to develop. Mm-hmm. And so those are all plus sides. The minus sides are that there's too much growth. Georgia's growing too fast to handle it. Mm-hmm. Because people are leaving the Rust Belt, as it were, are leaving the places that have grown too far. And coming down here looking for a new life. And so we're getting a lot of good people. We're also getting a lot of people that not necessarily going to help us much. We have no way to deal with immigration at this level.
Okay. Real quick, what was the title of the legislation that was passed in 1970?
It was called Coastal Marsh Protection Act.
Okay.
And the hill and time and scale of study and concern is increasing, and that's good. And going all the way from global, you see, we're thinking globally,
mm-hmm.
act globally.
Yes.
Okay, that's being seriously taken.
Okay.
The opposite thing, the tribalization, see, business and ecology are going global in their thinking, but much of politics is going towards tribalization, mm-hmm. forming of small ethnic groups. And you have, like in Yugoslavia, the country breaking up into little fighting ethnic groups, in that case based on religion, or the resegregation of blacks. All of that is sad to see, but maybe that's just a temporary resistance to change.
Mm-hmm.
People are not happy being members of global society. Family, we all family oriented. You know, we rally around our family and we fight to death to protect the family. So that the tribe, you see, tribalization, and so we have to start to understand the social and behavioral.